Good evening, folks. Back up the M1 with our lemon tree. 3 points against the Dirty Drogs. Joining me, as usual, Chris Clark and Andrew Gallagher. Lads, goal of the season contender there, wasn't it?
That's it.
Yep.
Even boys.
Always good to get one over Shelbyville.
It is. It is. Thank you. At least you got the Simpsons reference. Love it.
It's all right. Shake harder, boys.
Look, it's always, as we say, always brilliant when we get a result against the Drogs. It was a lively game, end-to-end stuff for large parts, but the manner in which you get a win like that there, it's drama, adds to the whole occasion, you know. So, Gally, I suppose we go to you first. What was your thoughts on the game?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I know the build-up's been going on probably for the last week or so, and local derby, we haven't had too many over the last couple of seasons, but I really enjoyed it. I'm not saying it was an end-to-end game. It wasn't, you know, there wasn't massive amounts of kind of world-class football, but I just thought it was a really good game. You know, it had a bit of everything in it. I actually thought, and I'll mention it early and get it out of the way, I actually thought the first half the referee was excellent. He let the game flow. He didn't, He didn't seem like, you know, I don't know if he's been reading Twitter, if he's on Twitter, Rob, but you know, they've gotten at the height of abuse over the last couple of weeks, but I thought he let the game flow really well. Didn't blow for silly stuff like they normally do. But yeah, I thought it was a great game. I thought if you're giving it to someone in the first half, maybe draw it, but I don't think there's a lot in it. I mean, Dundalk definitely had the better of the second half. We probably had the better chances, but yeah, I really enjoyed it. I thought some cracking performances. You know, Murray, Boyle, Cameron Dummigan again, Leahy as well, kind of almost went unnoticed, didn't get a lot of mention by the commentator, but I thought Leahy had a great game. But yeah, I thought it was an excellent game, and it's good to get a derby that's not a stale one, because 9 times out of 10 they are. I know there's been some high scoring ones over the years, but they haven't really been great games. But yeah, I thought it was a great match between the two teams. Yeah,
it was some great play. I mean, as you say, you named an awful load of players, and we've probably seen a Will Patching we haven't seen enough of since he came back. You know, he showed a little bit of that form from his time earlier in the season at Derry. Chris, what were your thoughts on the match?
Yeah, kind of very similar to Gally there. I thought we looked really solid as a team for a change. You know, we like there was plenty of interchange between cross field balls from Leahy over to Dummigan. It was nice to see kind of a swap up and change in play like that, you know, that we probably haven't seen enough of throughout this season. You know, you've mentioned Patching there. I think, God, Patching was so unlucky not to get a goal. I mean, it doesn't come closer than that. I don't think the keeper knew what to do with that ball, and to see it come back off the crossbar and see he is, you know, he'd want to go do a bloody lotto for that. But then, you know, that's the cruelty of football, isn't it? That he in the dying few minutes, he pulls off a save on the line, but it only ends up coming off clear into the net. Yeah. So it's, you know, who'd be a goalkeeper? But there was patches in that second half where we were all over them. I thought, wow, it's been a long time since I've seen a real display like this from Dundalk, where, you know, wave after wave of attack, they were, you know, down both sides, they were through the middle. We were interchanging passes. We were getting to the byline, cutting balls back across. I stopped counting fairly quickly the amount of corners, free kicks we were getting from Murray, because It was just endless, it seemed, one after another. And at some stage, I kind of did start wondering, as I started watching the clock, I was like, is this going to be one of these nights where we just batter them like this, but just don't get anything from it? Because how many times have we also seen that this year where we give a good account of ourselves and then all of a sudden we get sucker punched at the other end, heads go down and there's no fight in us to go and try to get back into the match. But I think it showed the resilience or whatever that we've seen in this team over the past few games in the league that's shown us, I suppose, pull away from that relegation battle and probably look higher up the table, probably a little too late, perhaps, when it comes to Europe. But it probably out of our hands, and it might depend on other results how they go over the next week or so for us. But look, it's nice to be, I think we're getting closer to say that this relegation thing may be a little in the distance. I don't know, but it's nice to see a performance like that.
you have to, if there's one thing we can be certain of this season, is the uncertainty of what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks. There's obviously, we play again on Sunday. You would hope a win on Sunday, and you would think we've just done enough to get out of the relegation zone. But you just, with everything that's happened this season, you still never know. But it was as you say, that second half, I think Dundalk really kicked it up a gear. Galli, and I know Declan O'Brien, Fabio, an ex-Drogheda and part-time Dundalk fan or player at one point, he was saying, you know, if it was a boxing match, the referee would have stopped it. I think there was a 10-15 minute spell where literally, yeah, I don't think Drogheda got out of their own defensive third of the pitch, between corners and free kicks and that. And that's something we've probably seen a little bit more, is it, over the last few weeks and months, you know, apart from the week of the Pats double header. But we've seen Dundalk starting to get on top a little bit more in games, particularly later, and that's a trait that's been missing for the past couple of years, you know. So I suppose, Galli, is that something that you've noticed, like a trend over the last couple of games?
Yeah, and it was you're right, it was definitely evident tonight. It was like after maybe probably like 55-54 minutes, that 15-20 minute was just bombardment of their defense. Like, it's, and what's great to see is that we're doing it, because what Chris said earlier on, what's normally happening is we're getting a run of the game, we're getting a run of the ball, we're making chances, we don't take them, and then we get hammered on the other end. And it didn't look like that was going to happen tonight. I know they have a little bit of a chance at the end. I think it might have been a free out, but it just looked like it almost, not that I want to cliche, you know, jinx it for Longford, but it almost looked like it was inevitable. We were going to score at some stage. That's what we had that feeling back, because that was like a Kenny thing and an early Vinnie Peart, you know, that we'll score eventually. It's just when. And you almost got that feeling. Now, you know, it was late. You know, it's one of those goals that it's almost a goal that Shamrock Rovers would score going winning the league. It's a lucky goal. It's something that just, it's one of those things, 9 times out of 10 it doesn't happen, but it's probably something they earned. They've definitely earned it in the match. But yeah, it's great to see just that little bit of, just that more kind of gung-ho with them. They never gave it up. I know there's that little bit of, you know, it's a local derby. You kind of want to play like that all the time. But it just, I don't know, maybe it's because it's just so close to the game. It didn't look like we were ever going to get bet. I know that's probably a bit harsh on Drogheda, but it just had that feeling of we were going to score at some stage. Now, we've probably had that feeling since, we probably haven't had that feeling since last season, but it's just nice to say that you're able to say, right, look, we created these chances. They've taken one of them. They've earned it. And I don't know if they've dominated the team, but that 20, like we said, that 15-20 minute spell, it was just relentless. It was relentless. And that's what's been missing. We've had a lot of the ball in the second half, a lot of games this season, but we haven't really done anything with it. And like Chris was saying, it must have been 47,000 corners we had. Like,
it seemed that way, didn't it?
Like, it was just crazy. It was crazy. But we were due one of them. And look at it's a sloppy goal from their point. But look, you'll take them all season. I mean, how many late goals have Shamrock Rovers had all 94, 95 minute all season? But yeah, it's great to see that we're finally putting that possession and that kind of willingness to go forward and just not relent on anyone. And it's, I think we've been due that those 15, 20 minutes all season.
I think what's more probably impressive with the second half display and like you say, Galli, that 20 minutes where we just absolutely bombarded them is when you look back on the first half, it was pretty even.
Yeah.
Even when you think of the goals disallowed and stuff like that, like, you know, another time you could have said either could have been given. They look pretty tight. But they're not, and then it goes in the half time, and it seemed like maybe Tim Clancy was like, look, they don't look like they're creating a whole lot. We can contain them. Gary Deegan, keep doing your thing here. Like, he was trying to control as much as he could, but I think he was on a knife edge from getting a yellow card fairly soon. The longer the match went on, he was involved in, you know, actually even for, I think for the free kick where we scored a goal, I think it was him then as well, who gave away the free kick. But, you know, I suppose maybe Gary Deegan getting a yellow card is a bit like Dan Cleary getting a yellow card. You can see it coming so far away. It's inevitable sometimes. But I just think if Tim Clancy thought about just containing us, it seemed like Vinny went for the throat on this one and said that they're still there for the taking. Let's go and get them. You know, they seem to be really set up for counterattack against us, which they can do very quickly with the likes of Phillips and Doyle in that seat, in that squad. You know, you've got to be very careful. And once or twice, you know, I think Andy Boyle put up a couple of good blocks and stuff in there as well. And, you know, marshal him out. And Massey had a wee sneaky header he was trying to get at the back post again. It would have been interesting to see if he had celebrated or what he would have done there.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking as well.
He gave out so much about it after to the ref. Like, I was like, what would he have done if he had scored, I wonder? But it's nice just to see that we didn't want to sit back on our laurels and just try to do that containment, that we were able to. Maybe it's just having better personnel back in the team again, that we looked stronger in our first 11, that we had the confidence to go on and take that. And a lot of that, I think, comes down to Murray as well, because he really was an engine tonight, a catalyst for so much that we done. And lo and behold, it's him whipping in the cross for the goal then too, you know?
Yeah, and I think at this point, it's a good time to say, if anybody wants to get their comments in for the Man of the Match competition to win a free pizza from Tony's Pizzeria.
I was only just going to ask, are we doing it tonight or are we doing it Sunday? So that's not decided.
Nobody wants pizza on a Sunday.
No, you can't have pizza on a Sunday.
Then again, it's Thursday. I thought it was Friday. It's actually Thursday. Who wants pizza on a Thursday?
Well, now you can have it for Friday.
Yeah. But yeah, if you want to get your nominations in, and we'll discuss that a little bit later. But yeah, going back to the goal, you know, it was one of those games we had so much possession, and like some of the other games where we've kind of bombarded the box of other teams and we haven't got lucky, it was starting to feel like it was going a little bit that way, didn't it? You know, and then it kind of felt like somebody's going to make a mistake on either team that's going to cost the team a goal. And tonight, as you say, Gary Deegan went out and pushed Murray to the ground in a situation where he didn't really have to, because Murray was going nowhere and he had nowhere to go. But it was a great ball into the box. You'd feel a little bit, if it wasn't Drogheda, you'd feel a little bit sorry for the keeper. He was pushing it, I think, to the post, or he was pushing it just wide of the post. And unfortunately, the only thing bigger than a post is Dan Cleary, and he was able to fumble it into the back of the net. But look, it was another great ball by Murray, wasn't it? And as you say, he's really, in this resurgence over the last couple of months, taking away the couple of Pats games, he's been the catalyst. You know, I heard on another podcast, is he in with a shout for player of the year? And I know he hasn't played a lot of the year, but I think when you look at our turn of fortunes, there's probably three people who you would say is, well, four if you count Cherry as well, but you would say Hooban hit form at the right time. Dumigan has been consistent all season. He's kind of like that Dennis Irwin, isn't he, where he probably doesn't get the praise he should get. But for me, I mean, I think Murray has been central to the good form of nearly everybody around him, you know. So when we talk about next year and players you want to keep, like, Murray has to be top of the list, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think if you're... Like, with the ownership, and we'll talk about that. If there was anybody that's in order, like, no matter who comes in, if a manager comes in next year and they've got any kind of eye on this league, if there's anybody that's an automatic contract, not an automatic, but definitely someone that's, we got to try and keep this for, Murray's got to be up there. I mean, there are others. Dumigan's had a great season. Boyle's obviously tied up for next year. But yeah, I mean, although he's missed a lot, and we mentioned earlier his fitness, he just can't seem to get a run of games together. I still remember, I mentioned this before. I remember when he came along the same year as Jack Byrne. Jack Byrne signed for Rovers. And Jack Byrne, first year of the season, got player of the month. And I actually thought Sean Murray was robbed, because he had a cracking start with Dundalk. But his inconsistency with fitness and injuries just, you know, he kind of played second fiddle to everybody else. But like you say, his resurgence over the last couple of weeks and months, he's been sensational. Like, there's no doubt he's got to be in there. Whether you base it over, if you got to go from day one, I mean, there are other contenders as well, but he's definitely able to shout. I think, like, even when Fabio O'Brien was mentioned on the thing, in a contrast where you've got Patching probably up for player of the year in the league until he signed back at Dundalk. So you've got that interesting contrast of Murray coming in, I mean, one of our better players in just a shorter space of time, and then Patching having just not having the run he had at Derry. But yeah, he's been excellent. Like, even his header tonight, his header in the first half, as soon as you've seen him coming in, you assume he's going to, even though he's a small man, you assume he's going to bury it because he's so used to scoring headers. He's done it in Europe for us last season, but he's been sensational. Like we said, the run of games with his fitness and his lack of injuries, he's been excellent, absolutely.
Yeah, you're seeing the impact of like Richie Towell would have had on the team back then. Like, that's exactly what I was just thinking while you were talking, Gally, of like, who would you compare him to in a Dundalk team, you know, from yesteryear? But yeah, it would be, he's having that same impact, isn't he, that Richie had. And you can make an argument, and I know it's only over what, 6 weeks maybe since he's been back in the team, but you can make an argument that has the likes of a Fats had that same impact that Murray is currently having on the team, you know, because that's exactly the way Richie was, you know. Like, Murray, as you say, he arrives late in the box. He seems to be involved in everything good, both going forward and going back, you know. Like, he tracks back very well too, but every good play going forward. And I'd love to look back on the goals that Hooban has gotten, just see where Murray was in the build up to those goals as well, because he just seems to be, he seems to be the catalyst for everything good that's happening in the club.
Yeah.
I think if you're trying to break down your player of the year, you'll be kind of stuck, like you say, Pingu, probably under a couple of different categories. So if you're looking for consistency, probably what you mentioned, Gally, you've got Domagan, who's jumped in, bear in mind, in a few different positions as well this year. He's been in midfield, he's been in central defence, he's played on both wings, you know, and yet adapted to all that. And then you've Andy Boyle, who, you know, we've seen him put in some thunderous performances and really throw himself on the line when it was needed for us to get some results. I'm thinking of the Pats away match that time as well, and he was just immense in that. There tonight, you know, his positioning again is super. Then, like you say, for influence, it might be over a shorter span with Murray, but you like the fact that he's come in and he's demanding that he's taken most of our set pieces now, shows that he's, you know, he most of the players probably know where to be on his deliveries, and you think how dangerous they are. They used to be we used to be probably looking at a time where our central defenders, in particular Boyle and Garth's back then, you'd be looking nearly double figures for the boys. We were that good with set pieces, but we seem to be back to that dangerous moment again for set pieces where that's become a real weapon for us again. And Murray's putting goals, important goals, and assists when needed. And like you say, probably some of the play, maybe like you just mentioned, Pingu, that he's probably not directly involved in, but he's probably there or thereabouts and pulled the defender out and created space for someone elsewhere, or jogging back or forth or whatever for an influence on the team. And then you've also got Hooban, who, you know, it has to hit such a sweet patch when we really needed him to, really turned it on, put in a half full of goals. It was probably, looking at one stage, it was a real disappointed season for us. And all of a sudden he's turned that around. So you've got someone who's getting edging closer and closer to a goal scoring record. Yeah. You have someone who's just a massive influence on the team. And then you've got two other candidates who could be just, you know, for pure consistent reasons more than anything. And just to shout out, I suppose, you know, speaking of Murray, he won the October Player of the Month for the 1903, which was announced earlier on and as well. So I think really realistically, he was probably should have won the Airtricity one last time, but I think they seem to be a month behind on everything. So when Georgie Kelly stops scoring, he gets the award then. So maybe he gets it this time. I'm not too sure. But it's hard. It's a hard decision. I presume on our last show on the 17th, we'll all have to come up with a conclusion for a player of the year. So that'd be my four in the melting pot, I suppose.
What are we giving away for that?
Two pizzas.
Can we ask for two for that?
Pizza and garlic dip.
Pizza and a side.
Well, look, we'll come back, obviously, that'll be a discussion for the last episode of the season, and we'll come back to the man of the match competition a little bit later on, because I think Donald might be joining us and potentially Stefan as well. But yeah, like obviously on last week's episode, we've been doing a lot of talking about the ownership or the potential change of hands, and has there been any real change since we spoke last week?
Apparently there's a third bidder, isn't there?
That's just Dr. Ward's enemy, mate. That's just heard yesterday. But
James Rogers reported this week that there's a third bidder potentially from North America. So I suppose with that, you wouldn't know how close they could be. Could they be already in contact with Peak Six over there? Is that an easier conversation and communication line for them? We don't know. I think if you ask anybody here in town, if you walk around or whatever and the conversation gets onto it, it gets very quickly to let's get this with Stat Sports and the local consortium. I think that's still where the majority of people will want it to go. I don't know, like I say, I haven't heard if there's any other movement other than that. Obviously, we still have the Northern Ireland consortium. We've got our local consortium and now one from North America. So look, for Peak Six, it's probably ideal, because if you were in a situation where you were selling the club as a concern, you would take any bid to come in. You'd be looking for even one, you know, as a potential. You'd lower the price and you'd do whatever you could just to offload it. They probably have a little bit more power now that they can pick and choose and play people off. Would that push the local consortium further down? Because would they have as much financial backing? I don't know. Is there potential something where some of these guys could come together? We don't know. And what is in, you know, we touched on it last week, Pingu, of, you know, and I said that I'd like to think that there's some sort of, I suppose that they have to hand it over to who they think is right, not potentially the highest bidder. But with a third bid coming in, with a third potential bid maybe coming in now, that might sway to two higher bidders over it, and that'd be my worry about trying to get it back to local ownership. Would that push it away? I don't know. So I think it probably puts more uncertainty, to answer your question, Pinku, when it comes down to it, that we thought we just had a straight shootout between two, but now there's a third come in. And the sad thing about that is that probably slows down the process slightly, that Peak Six might have been saying, well, you know, we're coming to the end of the season here. Let's get a decision on what we're doing, who's coming in, who's buying. We can make that decision. They can make the decision on who they want as a manager and players. That manager can then make a decision on players, if it's Vinny, if it's somebody else. But a third one, does that slow the whole process down? I don't know. If it's ending like buying a house, we'll be here for 6 months later, lads, and we'll be still no further.
With only Andy Boyle on the books. But yeah, I don't know if any of you read Jerry Malone's latest piece this week as well. When I mentioned there was been no news, but from what I gather, there's news that Jerry came out with news today that his sources were saying that potentially StatSport and Peak Six, there could be some kind of joint venture going forward with that there. And just, I'd be interested in, Gally, in your thoughts on that there, how you'd feel about Peak Six sticking around in some capacity.
Yeah.
Do you think it's time for them to go completely and wash their hands of it? Or do you think there is a way for them to stay?
Oh, there's at the end of the day, they're the custodians at the minute. So there's always a way for the current owners to stay in any business. We did mention it a couple of weeks ago that they could potentially stay on and maybe hand over the running of the club to someone. That was the thought process that we assumed Jim Magilton, and, you know, we thought this was going to happen, but obviously that's not working, whatever way they've done things and whoever's involved. But I mean, I don't think it's the worst idea on the planet, you know, that would have to be Peak Six and Stat Sports, or the local, not Peak Six and a North American company, or Peak Six and the Northern Irish. That it would have to be someone local who would be, you know, not emotionally maybe off invested in the club, would have a past history with local sports or whatever that may be. But that would be the, in their case, that would be the best way to do it if they were going to hang on and stay on. What they would hope to gain by staying on, the only reason I can see that would stay on is that they've been asked to by anyone coming in. So if StatSports financially can't pay what they're looking for, I don't really know. But it's definitely a runner. I don't really see an issue with it, provided that the running of the club, the day-to-day running and the coaching and all that falls on the local consortium that's taking it over. As we can see, Peak Six don't know a lot about football. So, you know, that's there's literally no point in them hanging on. But look, if you're going to ask fans, and they don't want them there. So, I mean, it's one of them situations that I only think that would work if it's the local consortium and Peak Six in the background. And I mean they don't even get a key to Oriel Park. They have to ask permission to come in. That's in the background. You know, but you know, it could work. I don't know the ins and outs of it logistically, how it would work, but it would be great for everybody, because StatSports or whoever the local consortium is may not have the funds to come in straight away, but they may say, look, we'll take the run of the club for X amount of seasons. Maybe it's only one season, maybe two or three, and then eventually we'll just take it off your hands. You know, it's a tough one, because Peak Six have created such an absolute shithouse. I just don't know whether that, if fans would want that as a whole. I just don't know. It's they definitely can't mix and match with the other consortiums. I don't see that working. That wouldn't be a runner at all.
Yeah, Chris,
even if it was a North, say the North American bid, but they wanted local people on it, and then say took the expertise.
It would all hinge on local.
But it still, Stats probably holds that local bid, probably holds that part. Then,
like having two owners that none of them are here, that doesn't make, like, you know, that it makes no sense. And then, like, Stats won't be here full time either, but at least they've got that local connection that we can all get behind. Look, I hate to be any one of them at the minute. I don't really know. Like, it seems to be an absolute nightmare to just logistically organize someone to buy the club. Like, it can't be that difficult. We want to sell, you want to buy. Like, let's, you know.
I think the hard part in all is this, if they've come to the conclusion, obviously, that they're selling, why didn't they come to this conclusion earlier?
Yeah.
So we could have this process before we got to the end of the season, towards now we're in a scenario where we can offer our manager a new contract, we can offer players a new contract, because who's going to pay for those contracts?
Yeah.
Coming up, which leaves the players in a real difficult scenario, because come the end of this month, they either need to take a contract somewhere else or go on the dole and hope that somebody from the club comes in and wants to re-sign them.
Yeah.
You're playing with people's lives and livelihoods and that. And that's not fair in any way. And that's a real sad thing for them.
Yeah. And when you've got clubs that are only up the road, like Talca Park is only up the road, and they've made a massive statement of intent this week with Damien Duff. There's a lot of rumors of Greg Sloggett. Like, who wouldn't want to play under someone who's been capped 100 times in the country? Now, Steve Staunton was also capped 100 times in the country. So whether he took over on Dog, but Damien Duff,
he was out in the track last week. Just saying.
Yeah, there you go. You just never know. But like Damien Duff, I listened to his interview. He just has that. He has that way about him that you want to play from. He just seems to have that knack of it. And you know when you can go an hour in the car to Talca Park, the dog's not that big a deal anymore. You know, like, especially with their contract on the table for you, and they seem to be hitting the ball. He'll be signing players from, what are we talking, next week? When the league's over in 2 weeks, so you know we're going to be so far.
You can sign pre-contracts now, of course.
Yeah, like we used to give out about not having a jersey for Christmas. That's the minimum. Like, we only know players, you know. Like, it's we've done it again.
Who's going to be there for the lodge?
Yeah, and football. We haven't got the add-on of European games now to drag this out. We're finished in, what are we, 2 weeks? This tomorrow, fortnight. So,
yeah, 19th.
Know, it's just crazy. Like, they've done it again. This is the third year on the road. They've done it again. They just waited so long to do stuff.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? You know, you kind of hit the nail on the head there, Gally. And we've said this on the podcast, I'd say, going way back to the start of the season, this isn't like 10 years ago. This isn't like when Andy and Paul took over many moons ago, where every club started every season, bar maybe a Rovers, with everyone else started with a blank slate. Mm-hmm. So there's no Stephen O'Donnells, there's no Mark Rossiters, there's no Richie Towles. You know, there's none of these diamonds in the rough that are going to be available. We might get a couple, but in general, the best players are going to be snapped up. You know, they're either going to be committed to the club they're with now, or they're going to be signed up very quickly to one of the top teams in the league. So, you know, as you said there, all this talk now of potential third bids, or this, what Jerry was talking about with the Stats Sports proposition, along with Peak Six, like, these things couldn't happen at a worse time. We were under the impression that a deal was done with the Northern Group last week. Then the local group was given to the starter this week to come up with something. But now we're still none the wiser a week later than where we were last Friday. You know, so it's, at least if we were sorted and we knew what kind of trajectory we were going with and who we were going with to lead us forward, players could be getting snapped up. You know, like Sean Murray said, what, 3 weeks ago in a newspaper article, he wants to stay at Orient.
But
the longer this goes on, you know, he could be promised something by any of the consortiums right now. But unless anybody's actually in charge, and that includes Peak Six. Peak Six could say there's a 1 year extension coming for you. But the longer this goes, he has to think about himself. You know, he has to think about where he's going next year. And it would just be a shame if some of the players are holding out hope for new ownership or new contracts, that, as you say, come the 19th of November, they're not going to be, you know, they're going to have to make a decision elsewhere.
And look, not to go over old ground again, but, you know, you're mentioning 1 year extensions on contracts that maybe some of the guys are that we currently have. It's very easy for someone to come in and offer them a 2 year contract now. You know, like we talked about how we started doing these longer contracts, 3 years, 3.5 year contracts. And that was the big thing that changed with Peak Six. If we're back to offering those 1 years, like I say, if Duffer's down the road and can offer you a 2 year contract with Shells, is that a better prospect than signing back on in Oriel Park? Possibly. Then you also have a question about, you know, facilities here in Dundalk versus the rest of the country. Like, a lot of the clubs in Dublin are using college facilities and things like that that are very well maintained and up to a very good standard. You know, we don't seem to be tapping into any of that. We are, have a pitch that pretty much all players seem to be concerned about, longevity of playing a full season on it, never mind having to do all your training sessions and stuff like that on it too. So when you start adding up what we can offer, even if that is only a 1 year extension, it's not fantastic. Without even the dangling at least European football like we've had been able to do previous, it's like, yeah, look, I know things aren't great, but here, you fancy playing in Europe? Okay, yeah, you know, people will say, you know what, I might be able to buy myself somewhere else then and move on. But to not even have that carrot dangling this year, that's just another hard, like, if we were talking about Duff coming in at Shells and what he can offer them, you know, we're not even taking into consideration the extra money that Derry could have for next season again. Rovers will be strong again. Bows are talk about, you know, will they push on if they got European football again and a cup? How attractive does that become to players with the whole project coming on with the new Daily Mount and everything else? Do you know, where are we now in that pecking order when you had one of the best managers, European football, the pedigree of having done European runs previous? You kind of say, you know what, I'll chance my arm with this guy, with this club. They're not too far from Dublin or whatever to drive up and down the motorway. It'll be a couple of other lads. We'll all jump in a car and we'll cut down on expenses. But I think that we're in danger of being frozen out, getting a lot of the big players in and players who could have an influence throughout your season. And that'd be my fear, that the longer this goes on, the less attractive we become, and you're bottom feeding off players who are just out of contract elsewhere, who just haven't been picked up by other teams, and that completely changes Unless an owner says, comes in very quickly and says, I need to take this club over and here's a massive wedge of money. All right, let's get the best players. And that changes everything. But right now, I'd be a little bit worried about that, definitely.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, just when you're saying, you know, people dangling the carrot of the 2 year, I actually, a little bit, I think if some of these players were offered a 1 year extension now, they might take it because they'll get paid through Christmas and they'll get paid all the way, where any of these other clubs, you know, that any new contract won't come into effect until the 1st of January. So they get a month and a half. It's only 6 weeks, but it's 6 weeks without pay at a busy time of the year or at an expensive time of the year. So it might just be enough for some of these. But, you know, we go back and talk about these takeover bids, and I just seen Sinead Toll has a comment up about how there was two million in the kitty when Peak Six took over. Apparently they don't want to leave anything. I think that was part of, you know, the Stats Sports, the local bid, wanted, I think it was 250,000 left in the kitty for signing players and that. You know, when bargains are happening, bargaining is going on and negotiations are going on, I would nearly, if this is just me and I don't know the ins and outs or the business side of this, but if I was Stats Sports, I'd nearly be asking Peak Six, if you're not going to leave any money, can you at least leave us some of our players? You know, yeah. can you help us? Can you get Sean Murray? Can you get Dumigan? Can you get these lads signed up for next year? So at least we're not starting with a complete blank canvas and lay out to them, well, this is what we anticipate the playing budget is going to be, negotiate on our behalf or whatever, just for these 1 year, just so that we're starting with the likes of, well, we've got five or six players at least in the first team. And I, like one thing with the Stats Sports that was kind of intriguing was they were talking about obviously putting in a grass pitch, but also using their connections with a Premier League club to get in players on loan. You would think that's probably Arsenal, given the relationship they have with them, and they just launched a product with Arsenal, I think two or three weeks ago.
Yeah.
And you look at obviously what Pats have done, you know, with the goalkeeper coming in from Liverpool and things like that there, you know, it's.
And previously when we brought in, you know, Michael Hector and that from Reading, you know, like they went straight into the first team and it benefited us that season under Fozzy.
Yeah. And that's it is, you know, there is a benefit to that. And the thing someone said to me the other day was Stats Sports have the stats on all these players as well. So, you know, you would think, if we're getting players that are connected with them, you're actually getting the data to show that these are good, decent prospects. It doesn't always work out like that. And look, talking of good, decent prospects, Steph McKevitt's joining us. How are you, pal?
Not too bad. Good after that result, I suppose.
Yeah, what did you think of the match?
The first half was a bit touch and go, wasn't it? Did a few chances and we had a few chances, and then the goal's been disallowed as well. Like, but we started to dominate the game then, second half, corner, free kicks, balls going into the box. Lee McConville was on the edge of the seat and walk. He was sort of saying after about 70 minutes, he was delighted he didn't swap walk to go up to it, but then he was gutted in the end and he never got up. But myself and himself, we weren't watching it in walk at all.
Lee's enjoyed his call out.
Would you
agree, Steph, we were saying earlier, and look, we don't want to go over the game too much, but would you agree that, you know, over the last 3-4 weeks, when you take out the couple of games against Pats, the Dock have started showing that, you know, what they showed before, you know, in seasons gone by, where coming up to the end of a game, there is a little bit of that kind of never say die. They're going at it and they're getting trying to get the upper hand, you know, towards the end of the game like they did tonight.
Like they're pushing for a winner there away in heading the game park, like it's local derby. Like a couple of months ago, they would have just, you know, settled for the draw, or, you know, we would have been conceding chances or sitting back, like, and It's good to see a bit of a mentality change. Like, surely that's coming from the leaders within the squad. Like, you can see Andy Boyle and stuff, you know, really trying to push the team on. Look, it's a total shift. Even I was up at the Waterford game, and you could sort of see, like, they were trying to go for the win. Waterford were poor and they had their chances, like, but you know, it's good to see them being a bit more positive, looking for wins instead of, you know, settling for draws and being under pressure and hanging on to stuff and getting beaten or whatever. But it's a bit of a shift, like you said, in the last couple of weeks, bar the Pats week.
On the double, dumped us out of the cup and then the league too.
Yeah,
we won't talk about it.
No, even though you just brought it up, Steph, cheers. We'll move on anyway to one of Steph's favourite topics, is the managerial situation. So moving on, you know, we were just talking, Steph, before you came on about the ownership and the change of that. But obviously this week, and Gally brought up earlier, Damien Duff getting announced at Shells. We don't know what Vinny's situation is moving into next year. And there's a couple of like decent young prospects and managers going to be available. Ian Morris obviously gone from Shells himself, and Dara Doyle yesterday released a statement saying that he's no longer with Longford Town, a manager that's very highly regarded by all accounts, and I know you know him personally from your time in the PFAI squads and stuff like that there. So when you look at candidates like that there, how would you feel under a new ownership? Let's say it is a clean slate, new manager coming in. Would someone like a Dara Doyle or an Ian Morris be someone you would be interested in getting in?
Yeah, but look, just from knowing Dara personally and the qualities he has, like on a shoestring budget with Longford, he was able to get them promoted that previously struggled for years and years to even to get out of the division. We all know how hard it is to get out of that division. And he managed to do it last season. He beat Shells convincingly in the playoff in the end, and look, they sort of had basically the same squad as they had in the first division, so he was fighting an uphill battle from the start. They've limited resources down there, and for a while there he was picking up a few results that looked a bit promising. Even like the record against us was like the two wins and a draw, I think, against us, and we have them now on Sunday. So hopefully we can write that one, make a change in the result in there. But I think he'd be an exciting young manager to come in. It'd be interesting to see, because obviously you don't know what he's going to be like when the pressure's on. You have to win games instead of fighting survival and hoping to pick up results here. Like, it's always hard to tell, but if he was announced, I definitely would have no issues with it. I'd be excited and looking forward to seeing what he could do. Ian Morris is sort of the same. Like, he sort of had the big budget at Shells, but in the end he achieved what he set out to do, and they've won that league at a fucking canter. Like, they've won it with massive games to spare. Like, and it's not an easy task to win that first division. I think Gally was talking about Duff being like sort of someone we should have targeted, you know, a bit of a profile name, wouldn't command a massive wage bill. But then again, you look, he's very demanding. You've the negatives where a lot of people are talking about he's jumped from one job to the next, He was with, I think he was with Rovers, and then he got the chance to go to, did he go straight to Celtic from there?
Yeah, from there.
Celtic under 18s, wasn't he? He was the manager. Yeah, I think within 2 or 3 months, he was brought up to coach in the first team.
Yeah. Look, he was highly thought of. I know a few Celtic diehard fans, and like they were ranting and raving about how good he was, and everyone at Celtic wanted him back over there. I was surprised to see him, because I know he was on the pro license this year, and then I was surprised to see him back in the Shells academy, like under 15s or under 17s, and but like the commitment that takes, like you're 4 or 5 times a week training, and then you have your match. Like, he was probably doing it, I don't know, maybe he was getting a small wage, but that'd be about the height of it, you'd reckon, unless he was he academy director. I don't think he was. Stephen,
no, just coach. Yeah,
Stephen Henderson was looking after the academy, wasn't he?
Yeah,
it's as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, up until not so long ago. So yeah, look, everyone says how good Duffer is, and you know, it'll be interesting to see now. He's sort of a bit of a box office at the minute. Everyone wants a piece of him at the minute, like. But yeah, something along those lines. But it's few and far between. Like, it's, you're sort of looking around going, who could you potentially bring in that would get a bit of a buzz back? Like when Kenny came to Dundalk
in a big Mercedes.
Yeah, from Donegal. without like him even doing a press conference or anything like that, there was a buzz straight away. Like, there was a buzz. Ross, Sean Murray,
trying to get Pete in the house. I'll take a shower, throw him off. No, you're right. Like, an appointment like that, like, he's probably not even on a massive wage to get the job. Like, even the job he's doing now, he's probably not at. But what I think that he'll end up doing is he'll actually end up saving the money, because players may take less money to go and play for him. You know, like, they mightn't have to match higher clubs, because I think the draw of playing for Damien Duff, someone who, like, it was like Kenny when he started off the rebuilding of Dundalk. Players will play for the person rather than, it's not they won't play for free, but they might say, look, there's €100 in the difference here. I'll go play for €100 less for Damien Duff. But if you get 20 players playing for €100 less, you know, like, I know it sounds mental, but it's a shrewd management appointment for them. I think he's going to be, no, look, at like Steph said, there is that negative thing with him where he probably blows his top and just loses the plot. But that's the way he is. His punditry is no different. But I think it's a massive coup for Chelsea, massive coup for the league. I've seen Sky Sports share it today, and fans of Chelsea were like, you know, they were gobsmacked that he was back in the limelight. But like, it was just like wondering where he'd been, and like, he's a hero over there. It's a massive coup for the league to get somebody like in, and whether we can pull off something like that, you know, I don't know. But that could be, you know, he hasn't managed the league before, but he knows the league, and I don't know whether we should be maybe looking down that road. I don't know if the several consortiums have someone in mind, but it's taken that long to sort of take over out. You'd like to think they have someone in mind ready to go as soon as it's announced, but
there's the problem, Gally, to be at this table, to be even in consideration for all of that, like, for whatever's going on with Talca Park, you look at Shell's off the field, you know, they've started that new course on football business management, is it?
Yeah.
So they're in doing all this sort of thing to get people understanding how to run a football club, and it's giving probably people from challenging backgrounds maybe an opportunity to get into it as well, and it's full-time education for them. You look at what Bowes are doing in their community, you look how well facilities are all set up in Rovers. Look, for us to be even in the consideration for Duffer, you have to have your house in order.
Yeah,
and let's face it, for whatever this team and say Vinny and his management is doing up there, our house is in shambles. That's not even, you know, it's, don't look behind you, come to this club because of all the stuff that we've done previously, but Jesus, you know, don't ask about Oriel Park, don't ask about future signings, don't ask about, you know, and that's the real fear. Like, imagine if we did have our house in order. Like, the only reason we got Stephen Kenny is because the Fast Fix lads came in and were running a good ship. And they were like, now let's push the boat out and let's bring in, you know, a real good manager. We're going to give him back in. We're going to let him decide what sort of players, let him dictate what sort of a club we can become, because Stephen Kenny has a football culture around him. And like you just said, you know, people will want to come and play for him, and that created it. Then you look at us, and for all the reasons why we said we've only got two players signed up for next year, you're like, we're a fucking shit show. Like, to be honest, we're a fucking shit show. I wouldn't want to come and play for us right now. I'd be like, well, is my wages guaranteed next year? Who's my manager? Like, if you're Vinny right now, are you looking at, you know, does he jump ship into something else that, like, he'd be very well thought of in Longford? Is that a more secure job for him going forward? Does he stay here to be loyal to Dundalk, considering he's come back when, you know, but let's face it, he probably saved us from more trouble the way we were spiraling before he got here. So there's that, you know. But if he doesn't and he stays here and new owners come in and they say, we don't want you, has he missed a managerial opportunity elsewhere? Like, so for, that's something he needs to think about.
Yeah.
And then what we're up against with when Shell's got rid of Morris, who do you look at then as a better fit for you as a manager? Do you go to Dundalk, where you don't even know who your owners are, the work that needs to be done off the pitch and on the pitch there? Or do you go to Shells that has a blueprint of where they want to go as a club?
Yeah,
that's our biggest problem right now. Until we start getting all that in order, I don't think we can even be in consideration for any of these high profile managers.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there, Chris. You know, when Andy and Paul came in, they built the club around Kenny and around his aura, and they gave him the free rein, as you say. It was a gamble, but it was one that paid off. And it's one of those, like...
It's a gamble, but not with somebody like Stephen Kenny, who had a track record throughout this club, or throughout this league, should I say, of performing and coming up with silverware. And what he done, and you know, the time he when Derry hit financial crisis and got relegated to Division One, and he didn't leave, I think everyone realized how, and we all knew he was going to get them back up as well. And I think his stock went up 20 points just on that. Of look, that guy didn't need to stay in the first division. He's better than the first division, but he stuck around for Derry City because he knew what Derry City meant to Derry. To the people in Derry, and you know, he's still so well thought of there. And I think that's the thing. Like, as much as a gamble probably to bring him in on the wages and everything else, and that they haven't, you know, they were new to the ownership at that stage, you know, Stephen Kenny probably was the safest gamble that you would ever play.
Yeah,
if there was an opportunity to bring him in, you do it every day.
What I mean by that is he came off an abysmal time at Rovers. Yeah. You know, there was talk that, you know, he lost the dressing room very early. So in that sense, you know, that won't come from with that. But
then you look at the caliber of player then he brings in to Dundalk, who are everybody who bought into his plan.
Yeah.
So when you think about for years where after everything had gone so well at Rovers and it was time for new management to come in then, You still had these guys who were part of a winning mentality with the team that had changed so much, and they'd understand why doing the same things wasn't going to get them these wins anymore. And if someone came in with a new, fresh approach, which Kenny obviously did at that time, it was like, well, this is the way we've done it. We've won titles before, so screw you, sort of a thing. Towards, I think when he came into Dundalk, it was like you know, when you hear when he signed Richie Towell that time, he couldn't believe that he was back playing with Bluebell at the time. He knew his pedigree. He knew so much detail behind him from when he was at Celtic and everything else, and why it didn't work out for him, and how he could potentially bring him back and give him an opportunity and put him on a platform. And then that conveyor belt just rolled when you think of, you know, Andy Boyle getting the opportunity, going to Preston, Horgan the same, you know, like it was every year we were losing another quality player, and at that stage his stock had just gone up even more. You knew if you played with Stephen Kenny, the world was your oyster in this league. You know, you were going to win titles, you were going to play in Europe, and you had an opportunity to go and play it at a higher level if you thought you were good enough for it.
Yeah, and I suppose, look, you know, whoever takes over next, whether that's Finney staying on under new ownership, whatever, whoever is coming in, it's going to be another big gamble, isn't it? But, you know, going back, as I was saying, to those couple that became available this week, like, you look at Longford this season. Longford are probably the best football inside. They get relegated in the League of Ireland in a long time. The problem is they just didn't have the quality of player to play the style of football that Dara wanted. And that would be a style of football you would be happy to see probably at Oriel Park again, you know. So, Gally, would someone like that, being backed by owners, being allowed to get in players he wants to get in, would he be someone you would be interested in getting? Like, would he be the kind of manager you would want to get? Because I think the expectations of the Dundalk fans need to be realistic coming in. This isn't 8-9 years ago. You know, this isn't people coming in. Not saying the Peak Six won't, or not Peak Six, sorry, not saying the Stats Sports Andy Connolly won't back the team, but I think they're not going to maybe... They're not going to back it in the way the Peak Six backed it when they took over with that kind of money. You know, they're not going to have that financial clout. As I said, the players aren't going to be available that were available to Stephen Kenny before. So let's say it was a Dara Doyle or an Ian Morris. would you be happy with someone like that coming in, being back to the extent that that new ownership could back them to?
Yeah, I probably, it would be like Chris was saying, it'd be a massive leap of faith to appoint Dougherty. But then when you look at it, Keith Long got relegated at loan and Bowes took him. And look what he's done there. You know, you have to, and that's why you need localized people. I don't mean locally, you need football people and you need someone to see. So like Andy and Paul seen Stephen Kenny for what he was. Now, the dogs in the street knew how good Stephen Kenny was. It was a perfect culmination of time and everything. He was 6 months out of the game, whatever it was. But yeah, someone like Darragh Doyle, the style he plays, like we just mentioned Damien Duff, he never managed before. So Damien Duff could come in and be an absolute, I don't see it for 1 second. I think he's going to be top class. But someone who plays the way Darragh, like we had Marzi on here halfway through the season. And he done nothing but praise the work they've done, like the way they play, the way they train. You know, they were so unlucky in games, in particular against Rovers. They just seemed to concede, just couldn't seem to finish it off. And you know, he was livid over the result we got against them early on in the season. But definitely, you know, I've only watched Longford play. I think I've only watched them play 3 times when I haven't played Dundalk, but they've always played good football. There's never been all this long, nothing that wouldn't attract you to the coaching team. And I do think it would take a massive leap of faith from any owner to hire a manager that's been relegated. But I bring about up Keith Long because he had the same situation. Like, you can be a top class man, but you can only coach what's in front of you. If the players, you know, like Margie was saying, if a little bit of luck, you know, they could have changed a lot of Longford games. I'm not saying it would have kept them up. But I do think someone like that could definitely benefit from a clean slate. So coming up to something like Oriel Park, you know, and another one would be Ian Morris. I actually think I'd take Darragh Doyle because I do think he's just seemed to be, he's been around the league a lot longer. I just seem to, he seems to be more engaged with fans. Longford fans rave about him. I know Kieran Burke absolutely, like, you know, worships the ground he walks on. He seems to have a real knack of, you know, galvanizing players and stuff like that. But yeah, he's got to definitely be in the running because you've got to look for someone that's, ideally you want someone who's been in the League of Ireland. Now, who you get after that, I've absolutely no idea, because people who play like that, who coach like that, are already involved. Like, we've seen Paul Doolan come back after years of giving out and not being in the football. He does about 6 minutes in that loan, he's gone. So, you know, how of all the experience that man has, he's won a league with Drogheda, you know.
I think his contract, he said this week, though, his contract was only 7 games.
Yeah, but he didn't seem to have any interest in signing another one, but from what you're hearing. You know, like, it just seems to be, you know, like, maybe he wants the Oriel Park job. Maybe he's going to throw his hat into the ring up here. We don't know. We haven't seen enough of him to see. Like, we haven't even seen enough of him to see what he plays, what type of style he plays. So
imagine the next Loud Derby, could you?
But yeah, look, it could take something like that. You know, and you, like what I was saying with Duff was, it's not so much the profile name. It's something like, you need someone who'll buy into the manager. It's not so much signing for Dundalk. You need someone to come in that can bring in players that want to play for him and the way he operates and know the way he operates. And that's what Dundalk need. It's a whole kind of, it's a reset button that's going to be needed up here. And look, that's, I don't think it's the worst idea on the planet. It would be a massive jump. Only Stat Sports and the localite would come up with it. I think if another group gets in, I think you're going to be looking at someone possibly from outside the league.
Yeah,
worked for Waterford, didn't it?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, it is. And like, there's another man, like, talking about galvanizing players and giving them a kick in the arse at the knee. Mark Bertram. Now, again, a big jump taking him up here, but you know, another man that's completely changed the fortunes of Waterford over half a season.
Mm.
You know,
I think sometimes in football, like, the stars can sort of align that. Like, if we hadn't won that playoff game against Waterford, Stephen Kenny wouldn't have even looked at us at being in the first division. Being realistic, like, he wouldn't have after going so bad in the Rovers game. Do you know what I mean? Or the Rovers gig, he would have just taken a wee breather. But and then getting the players in that he got, like, players that was the scarlet that people thought, oh, he's not good enough. Like, taking Andy Boyle from Shells, I think they'd been relegated. I know they lost the cup final, but like he was
he wasn't even a starter on the Shells team, was he, at the time?
think he was sort of in and out. I don't think he was a mainstay in the team anyway. Like, you're just taking him, for example, like the likes of players he brought in there, that like Darren Meenan had been round the clubs, never really settled anywhere, and then he comes in and he was fantastic for us for a couple of years. I know there was the two boys had already been there previously, Mountney and Shields, but he's kept them on for a reason, and he's seen the potential in Hoban. Hoban was only 19, 20, was he, when he come up?
Yeah,
come up young. York originally,
Mervie, wasn't he?
He was with Melview, and I know he'd been in the UK and sort of went under the radar, that he came back home and went close to his hometown, like, and the likes of that, like he's an eye for a player, but all the players had a point to prove, and I think there's definitely players within our league that could be the same. You just need the right man to come in, sort of, you know, have a bit of charisma about them. Players want to play for them, and you just go from there.
And Rossi said the same stuff last week. You saying, like, it was almost like a team of misfits. And he just was able to galvanize his team together. Keep using that word. But I think he mentioned the likes of a Pat Fenlon, someone that's been out of the game. And I don't know whether that. I think that the profile needs to be someone who can just get, who players will want to buy into. We got to forget about wearing the Dundalk crest for now. You got to get a manager in that can attract players. Now, ideally, that's someone with League of Ireland experience. Who that would be, I don't know. But that would be that would be the number one remit for me, because this club needs a complete overhaul. Whether we keep four or five players or not, you know, you're going to need to start signing some of the best players going, or some of the best young talent that the league has to offer. And there's only certain managers that will be able to do that, considering the season we've had.
Yeah. Well, look, this is a discussion we're probably going to have over the next couple of episodes as well. And I want the next episode, I want to discuss who my pick would be for the manager who has a pedigree in the League of Ireland, a legend. He's adored by Dundalk fans, and it'd be great to see the prodigal son return, Neil Fenn. So I'd love to see him back as manager.
I'm going to be out that one.
Is, you know, Manny Tipton coming with him?
Maybe. But moving.
I know which one I'd prefer.
Moving swiftly on after that one. Man of the match competition. It's time to announce our winner of that. Steph, because you missed a lot of the chat about the match, who would your pick be for the man of the match tonight? Even though you didn't watch it, but from what you heard.
Yeah, from what I heard other people saying and not watching and walk. Look, there was a few candidates, I suppose.
Don't go against Ross now, though.
Yeah, look, it'll be a big trouble. It'll be a big trouble if I do. I was going to say, the two boys at the back done particularly well. Boyle and Cleary, Dunmigan was good again, solid. We started progressing more in the game, and like Sean Murray assisted the goal, so going to go with Sean Murray. And Ross is the winner. Well done, Ross. Congratulations.
Good job, my son. Well done, my son. Chris, who's your pick there?
I'm with Steph on this one. I think Murray's been head and shoulders probably our best player over the past few games, and it's another assist from him, and you know, another top performance again. So Murray again.
Yeah, and I think I was waxing lyrical about him earlier in the episode. So for me, it was definitely Murray again. He just was involved in everything. Dundalk done well tonight. Gally, we leave it to you to give your pick, and then you can announce the winner tonight.
Oh, lovely. Full house. Murray, I mean, Andy Boyle, an honourable mention. Dunmigan, I thought, was good as well.
Poor Cleary scores a winner in the Loud Derby, lads.
I think Murray's just been... Murray just has that. He just has that little, like, it's like this. If he wasn't playing the game, it can change a lot of games for us. And I just think, you know, with Fats missing as well, you know, it's just that kind of player we need. And yeah, full house with Sean Murray. I don't know when was last year we done a full house, boys, but that's when there's four of us been on. But
not since Chris Shields left.
Not since Chris Shields. Am I picking a winner here? Am I?
You are.
You can pick the winner tonight.
We're going to go with
Ross McKevitt.
Because I'm hearing he texts in every week, David Moore. That's the winner for tonight's match. For tonight's, is it David Moore? No?
Yeah, yeah. David, you can contact Gally and he'll source your pizza for you.
Yeah, contact me there on Facebook. I don't know if we're friends on Facebook. Sure, add me.
Steph, you can tell.
Contact, all you have to do is contact Tony's Pizzeria and let them know you won the pizza with our friends.
Steph, you can tell the child that it's Uncle Gally's fault that he didn't win it tonight, all right?
You can have ice cream for your breakfast before school.
Just to make up for it.
Jesus Christ.
So, well done, David, on that. Well done, Sean, as well, on the important Townend man of the match. Looking ahead or looking at the table after that result, we've leapfrogged Drogheda tonight. Chris, do you want to pull it up there?
Very cluster.
There we have her.
There we go. We've got one more game played than the rest of the pack, apart from Drogheda, and sitting in sixth place. And Steph, what do you think? Do you think fourth place is still out of reach, or do you think we've got a chance?
Yeah, look, we're after winning our last two games. I started looking at Waterford's fixtures that are behind us, and it looks like they have a nice run. They have Rovers in the next game, which they might get points out of that, but I think they have Pats in the last game. Like, Pats aren't going to risk anyone before the cup final, and they have somebody else. Maybe it's Longford, I'm not too sure, but just I don't know. Hopefully Bowes take their eye off the league with the cup final in mind, and there you have a couple of tricky games as well. So look, it's not out of reach. What, we're 2 points behind, a couple of games left. Why not?
I think it's strange though. It just really sums up this season that you're looking at Derry on 47 points, Bowes 45, us up to 45, Drogs 44. Like, a Waterford win and a Harps win, like, Drogheda, you'd be a little worried there.
Yeah, I just seen a comment there. They could go very easily. If they go in a bit of a, it'll be a short, but they could go in a bit of a downward spiral here, and they could get very easily sucked in there big time. Yeah.
Is that not what happened to Shells last year, really? Yeah. Like, you know, they just hit bad form at the wrong time, and you run out of games before you can't get yourself out of it then. And then you're trying to play a playoff when you're out of form, when you're playing teams coming from the first division who are all in form to get there.
Yeah.
You know, it's a recipe for disaster, but it's amazing that what look, lads, this I don't want a downer on this, but imagine Bowes go and win the cup and we still finish fourth and we don't get Europe this year. Imagine how heartbreaking would that be?
I'd rather miss it now.
Yeah. That would be absolute heartbreak. I should have the fixtures for this weekend.
Draw our way to Bowes next. Just tricky, like.
Yeah, is that next Friday, is it?
Sunday.
It's Sunday, is it? They're playing Sunday. It's
Sunday.
Yeah. So Pat Sligo and Waterford Rovers playing tomorrow, and Harps. Harps at home to Derry. So, like I say, you probably want Waterford to lose and a draw. Do you want that, or do you want
you don't
Harps
know
to win on that one?
Point deduction for both teams.
It'd be perfect. And then Bowes played. Bowes played Drogheda then.
Sunday.
Yeah. And I think Anne just came in there to say Drogs two-way matches are obviously Bowes and then Rovers then after that. So.
Yeah, it's a good shout, Drogheda. They really could. They really could get just, like you say, shells a couple of seasons ago. It could be just one of them. I mean, look, we keep winning, but you're banking on everybody else now. But look, it could happen. Like, I hope it does, because it means we're not. So that's all we're looking for, really.
Well, my fear is, though, you look at Waterford of late. I know they threw away a win earlier in the week, but you know, Mark Wertham has them playing a decent bit of football, and they have chalked up the wins of late. Harps tend to be good, but it's a bit of indifferent form. But I suppose, look, Drogs did win. Did it beat Derry earlier in the week? So that's probably a saving for them to get those three in the bag, because it's going to be a big weekend for that end of the table, for certain.
that cluster of five teams, you win one game and you're sort of looking up going, can you get
Europe here?
And then you lose a game and you're like, where's that playoff spot?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, that's for me, I know like a lot of people are saying they want Harps to win the game. You kind of, from the perspective, our aim should still be to avoid relegation, you know, even at this stage, even though it looks like it's out of sight, but you probably hoping Harps lose that game. If they lose it, they have to make up a lot of goals in order for us to get into that playoff. You know, we're as good as safe with that one. So for me, I'd probably be looking at a Harps loss on that one.
I'll go with Steph's points deduction.
Yes.
Definitely.
Well, I suppose that's it, is it, for tonight?
I'm happy with that.
Nice.
We'll go into the weekend with a win, Pingu. Let's just take that.
Yeah. And it's nice to have a Friday and not having to do a podcast as well. So thanks, everybody, for watching. Congratulations to Sean Murray for the all-important man in the match. Good man, David Moore, for winning the pizza finally after all your texts.
Sorry to Ross.
Sorry to the child for not letting him win there. And sorry to Sharon for someone giving out about the wallpaper as well.
This has been a hell of a show, lads.
This has been great. Thanks, Steph, for the cameo.
On again.
No, thanks, everybody. And Steph, we let you wrap it up tonight.
Just going to continue on from you and just say thanks.